Mary, you're my favorite. They're like, I'm mom's favorite. I play them. That's okay. It's good. All right. I feel like I am a million miles away from y'all, and I hate microphones. I was not going to use it. I was just going to stand down there, and we were just going to chat, but he said I had to stand up here, so here I am. Very good sermon already. I love Brother Shirley. I could listen to him preach all day. There are just some people you can listen to preach all day. He's one of them. I could just listen to him all day. I just love his stories. I love his energy. And I love how he picks on my husband. It's not terrible. I shouldn't, but I do. He deserves it. Trust me. I know. All right. Well, I have, he said, 30 minutes, which is going to be more than enough. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to hurry because then we can go use our bathroom break, right? All right. All right, diaries. How many of you have diaries? Anybody? Come on, be honest. Raise your hand. You're girls. I have three daughters, okay? Get them up there. I know you got them. I've got two sons, a 16-year-old and a 6-year-old, and then three daughters, 14, 11, and 8. So I've got, we sandwiched our daughters with our sons. We planned that. We did that on purpose. And so I've got a boy to protect them when they're, at, you know, up here. And then I've got a little boy down here to beat them up if they're picking on the sister. So we did that well. Little bit about myself. I was a bus girl. My family did not go to church. And we lived just around the corner from a Baptist church, literally within walking distance. And my parents didn't go. They were more Catholic, meaning they went on Christmas and Easter. And even then, sometimes they didn't. But I remember the pastor came by and asked if we could ride on the bus to Sunday school. And my parents said, sure. Are you kidding? Free babysitting. Absolutely, they can go to Sunday school. And so we did. We started riding the Sunday school bus. And we did that for several years. And I remember we would come home from church. And it was an old-fashioned Baptist church where the pastor would get up and he would jump up and down and he would scream one minute and be sobbing the next, and just the whole range of emotions. And my mother, who grew up very, very Catholic, she went to a Catholic school, and all of her teachers were nuns, and whenever she got in trouble, she had to kneel on the floor and say Hail Marys, and she got in trouble a lot because she was a pest. She used to throw snowballs at the nuns in the winter. She got in a lot of trouble for that. And she said she had the old-fashioned ink pens, the wells, where you had to do. And she said one time she got her hands wrapped for a bad penmanship or something. The nun came up and cracked her a couple times on the hand. And so when the nun turned around, she took the lid off her ink pen and went and put ink all down the back of her white habit. She got in big trouble for that one, too. But my mom was very Catholic. And they are very quiet and very reserved in church. And so when we would go home and tell her about this man who jumped up and down and screamed and cried and begged, and they thought we were in a cult. Terrified them. So then they came to visit to make sure that we weren't going to go off the deep end. And after they visited, the pastor came to our house and spoke to my parents, and they both got saved. And then we started going as a family. And so when I was about, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years old, we started going as a family. And that, and shortly thereafter, I got saved, and the rest is history. I went to public school through 8th grade, and then I went to Christian school. I paid my way through Christian school. My parents couldn't afford it, so I did. And graduated, went to Crown College, met my husband, and we've been in Gaylord for 17 years. So that's just a bit in a nutshell. Diaries, back to diaries. My daughter, I have three. I have one that likes to write everything down. Everything. It's kind of humorous, actually. She doesn't know I read it, but, you know, as the mother, that's my privilege. I always tell them, I own you, so I own everything you have. So if you have a diary, I get to read it. Fine. You know how that 14-year-olds are. How many of you are 14? Go on. Yeah. Fine. That's what I get. Well, I found a few humorous diary entries. One of them goes this way. Dear Diary, this was written by a 7-year-old, okay? Dear Diary, my husband will be like this. Number one, he will be a Christian. Number two, he will be nice. Number three, he will be strong. How do you like that? He will be. I love it. Number four, he will like animals. Okay. Number five, he better like children. Number six, and he better like girls. That just cracked me up. Number seven, my children might like funny people too. Number eight, he will be funny. And number nine, he better like me and the children. I just thought that was so cute. A little 7-year-old. This is what he's going to be like. He will be this. Another one, Dear Diary. Woke up, changed into my uniform. So far, so good. How many of you had days like that? Oh, So far, so good. I'm up and I'm dressed, okay? Don't ask much more of me. Another one, dear diary, do not try this at home. I put some after-death sauce on my tongue and it burnt in flames. It's just little funny things little kids write. My children write the funniest things. Here's an example of diary entries throughout life, and I think that we as girls can relate. Elementary school, dear diary, boys are so gross. If John looks at me again, I'm going to punch him. Okay? That's elementary. Junior high, dear diary, John smiled at me today. My life is complete. Okay? Junior high, for real. High school, dear diary, guys are such jerks. When will they ever grow up? College, dear diary, John is the man of my dreams. We've been dating for 6 whole months. I can't wait to marry him. And then married life. Dear diary, if John leaves his socks on the floor one more time. And that is about the evolution of a diary. That's about right. I've got an elementary girl who boys are just ew. Okay, if they're in her bubble, she's ready to fight. And then I've got the little, 14-year-old, every time someone looks their way. Oh, brother, we're going to have fun with that one. All right, but when you think about diaries, what's the best part? What's the best part about a diary? What can you do with it? Lock it. It's got a key. That's the best part. Who wants to just write their, life's emotions on a chalkboard and let everybody read them? Nobody. That's why you write them in your diary and you lock it and you lose the keys every time, right? That's what those are for. Well, the best part about a diary is that you can lock it because usually they come with keys. If you don't want anyone to read what you've written, you simply write it and lock it. And usually no one can get into it without your permission, unless you're an expert lockpick like myself. And I have broken into many locks. I think their little brother has too, I think that is a talent that every mother should learn. It's my business to know what's going on in my child's head, so if I have to break into the diary, so be it. Okay? Keys are useful items. We use them to start our vehicles, we use them to get into our homes, we use them to get into our offices, place of business, whatever. Have you ever locked yourself out? Anybody? Have you ever locked yourself out of your car? I hate that. I hate that so much. I don't know why that irritates me. I have done that. And I had to call my friend, Joel, can you come help me? And he wedged the door and got it open. My husband just last week locked himself out of his office. It was hysterical. He left the office to go do something, staff meeting or whatever, and he left his keys on the desk, which is normally not a problem, but staff meeting went so long that everybody in the college building had left for the day and locked the building. So here he is outside of his office, outside of the building. He can't get into the building where his keys are, his wallet is, his cell phone is, so he can't call anybody. And so I said, well, what'd you do? He said, well, luckily my window was cracked open, so I literally, a window this wide, he wedged it open and climbed in. I'm glad he's skinny. But you know what? That's if he had not locked his keys in there, it would have not been a problem. We use keys to let ourselves in or to lock someone out. You ever locked your siblings out? I did. Oh, my mom won't listen. My mom's in heaven. Oh, that means she knows. Oh, no. I used to do it all the time when we babysat. I was the third oldest of eight, but my older two siblings lived elsewhere, so I was the oldest at home, and I have five brothers. Five brothers. That is not fair. It's not nice, and it's not fair. And I had five brothers, and they were pests. Let me tell you. As the oldest, they would always say, yes, mother, to me, because that's what boys do. Well, if I would get mad at them, I would say, go outside and play, and then I'd lock all the doors. That was great. They'd pound on the windows, pound the doors, and then, that was before cell phones, so your parents can't text and say, I'm on my way, and that's when you clean everything up, and, okay, now we're good, right? No, I didn't hit you. Don't tell Dad this, but we're all good. We're good, right? We're all friends. Okay, good. That was before all that. Okay, so I would just, be doing my thing, and I could see the car coming down the road. We lived out in the country, and I'd quit going and unlock the doors and be like, blah, blah, blah. And the boys would tattle, Mom, she locked us. I'm like, no, I didn't. Doors unlocked. What are you talking about? Yeah, I did that, and my mom knows now. She's in heaven, so sorry. But, they deserved it. They really did. Okay, most of us are familiar with with Revelation 3:20 that says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. Right? We've heard that verse before. Even though the Lord doesn't need keys to gain entrance to our lives, Jesus does not let himself in, and he will not force his way in. The Bible says, I stand at the door and knock. He's not going to force his way into your life. What he does is he stands at the door and he knocks. And then he waits for you to unlock the door. He waits for you to let him in. That's what that verse means. If you give Jesus the keys, he doesn't have to stand outside. As Christians, there are several keys that we need to give the Lord. The first key is a key to our eternity, and that's salvation. The rest of the verse says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him, and he with me." When we accept Christ as our Savior, we give him the keys to our eternity. He locks the door to hell and unlocks the door to heaven. Jesus said, "I'm standing at the door and knocking, and if you let me in and accept me into your life, I will take you to heaven with me when you die." Those are the keys to eternity. Those are the keys to salvation. The second one is the key to your heart, and that is surrender. This is so much more than just going to the altar once and saying, "I surrender. Lord, do with me what you will. I will," and you fill in the blank. It's so much more than that. Many of us live in houses nowadays. How many of your houses have only one room? Praise Jesus, mine does not. I have a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom house and 5 children. You do the math, okay? Yeah, not much space. We are a very close family. But even in my little house, we have 9 rooms or 9 doors. Even though it's a small house, we have a lot of small rooms. All right? Has anybody ever dropped by your house unannounced? Anybody ever, you have friends, really close friends. Usually it's close friends. Sometimes Jehovah Witnesses where we live. But usually it's close friends. And at my house, we've got these friends, truly very close friends, where if they did stop by, it's not a problem. But there have been times when, my phone would ring like, "Hey, what's going on?" And, "Hey, what are you doing?" "Not much." Or, "Do you want to do anything tonight?" "Well, I don't know." And I'm looking at my house. And remember, I have 5 kids, okay? Range 16 to 6. So my house doesn't necessarily look like a museum, right, Emily? Emily comes to my house a lot and cleans my daughter's bedroom for her. Emily, wave. That's my daughter's best friend back there. Okay, so my house is not always spotless. I do my best, but with 5 children, it can be difficult. Well, I remember one time, it was a particularly, I don't know if it was a rough day or a rough week. They all kind of blend together sometimes. And this friend called and said, "So you want to do something? You want to get together? Hey, let's have coffee." I'm like, "Well, okay, what are you thinking?" "Well, we're in your driveway." So we are throwing stuff everywhere. I'm not joking. "Luke, you've got the living room, best room, you got the kitchen. Andrea, in the bathroom. Jack and Mary, go find something to pick up." And we're literally throwing things into closets and slamming doors. Anybody else's mother like that, or just me? Because I don't care how close of friends they are, I want it to look presentable. Okay, so we're throwing stuff in closets. It's really funny when that happens. My kids just die. They die laughing at me, okay? So, it's like madness. Stuff is flying everywhere. Things are getting shoved into closets. Doors are getting locked. And then later you're like, "Now, where did I put the..." And you don't remember because you shoved it in some random closet. Or days later you go to open the closet. "Now, why in the world is that in there?" Remember your friends came by and you shoved everything in there? Or is it like you open the closet, "Oh, hey, Jack, how long you been in there?" And my Jack would be like, "Mom." Okay, so it's when somebody just stops by, you're like, "Quick, throw things in the bedroom." It's usually my bedroom. It's always my bedroom. "Throw everything in my bedroom, shut the door. Nobody's going to go in there. Just shut the door and lock it. No one can go in there." Okay, that's what we do, all right? What if I invited you to come live in my house? Come live with me. I don't have any extra space, but hey, come live with me anyway. But come live with me, and I lock the front door, and I invite you in. But then I make you stand in the entryway. You can't go any further. Now you're going to move in, but you're going to stand right here. That's as far as you can go. Okay, that's not right. That's not what we do. Okay, I let you in, didn't I? I opened the door and I invited you in, but you can't move past the entry. That's where you stay. That's it. You're in my house, but that's it. That's as far as you get to go. Okay, that's the kind of like the same thing as saying to the Lord, "All right, Lord, I'll trust you to save me. I want you to take me to heaven when I die. But that's as far as it goes. I don't want to give my life to you. I don't want to serve you. I don't want to do what you want me to do. I just want you to save me. That's all." Okay, so now you've let him in, but that's as far as it goes. I'm going to let you save me, but that's it. I don't want to give you anything else. Right? Let's say I invite you to move in, and I let you actually come past the front door, and I invite you into the kitchen, and we have a piece of cake, and it's probably going to be chocolate because that's what I live on. And I say, hey, have some chocolate, have some cake, have some coffee, and you sit down at the table, and we enjoy, you know, fellowship and cake, and who doesn't enjoy cake and coffee? And then I say, you know, make yourself comfortable, relax, you know, just you know, feel free to do whatever, but you can't leave the kitchen. Because that's kind of like, what? Where am I going to sleep? What am I going to, how, no, that's not going to work. This isn't right, okay? If we do that, or we wouldn't do that to each other, and yet we do that to Jesus. We say, Lord, I want you to save me, but. Lord, I want you to, you know, I want you to help me out of this situation, and then. Okay, it's not right. That's not what we should do. If that's unacceptable to do to each other, why do we do it to God? Why do we say, Lord, I want you to come in. I want you to come into my heart, but I don't want you to go any further. I want you to save me, but that's as far as I'm willing to go. That's as much as I'm willing to give. Okay? We tell him to come in. We tell him to move into our hearts. We tell him to do whatever he wants, but then we lock doors on him. Lord, come in and do whatever you want in my life. Click. Click. Throw a few things in this closet. Click. Come in, Lord, do whatever you want. And yet he's got half the doors are locked to him. Why do we do that? Why do we do that to him? I'll follow you here, but I'm not going to go there. I'll do this, but I won't do that. Why do we do that to God, and yet we want him to bless us? We want him to, you know, take care of us. We want his blessings, but we don't want to do anything in return. We don't want to give him our lives. Okay, there are several rooms, I think, that we lock in our hearts. You know, when we invite God into our hearts, it's not just one big key for all. I think that there are several rooms in our hearts. And there are several rooms that we need to give God the keys to. And you say, okay, well, what room? Well, what about the music room? That's my music. What's wrong with it? The lyrics are good. Don't tell me what I can listen to. That's my stuff. Click. You just locked that door. God, I want you to bless me. I want you to come into my life, Lord. I want you to lead me. But you can't go in this room over here. You can go in this room over here, but stay out of that one. That one's mine. Okay? What about your closet? Ooh, that's a hard one. I don't want anybody in my closet just because it's messy. It's always messy, my closet. That's where my daughter gets it from. I tell my husband it's his fault, but it's really mine. Shh, don't tell him. He won't listen to this. Okay? The closet. Don't tell me what to wear. Don't put any guidelines on my clothes. I was talking to somebody, a full-grown lady once, not too long ago, and she was kind of in a leadership position. And we were talking about clothes and stuff and dress standards and skirt lengths and all kind of stuff. And she said flat out, she said, I told my husband, don't you tell me what I can wear. And I was like, oh. You know, I know the reaction showed on my face. I was trying to be like, oh. But I know my face was like, whoa. You know, what do you mean? You know, I mean, don't you, that's none of your business what I wear. You want to bet? Yes, it is his business what you wear. And so I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, if she says that to her husband, you know she says it to God. You know, don't put any guidelines on my dress. It's none of your business what I wear. That's between me and God. I have a feeling that he may not be quite as happy about some things as you may think he is. Okay, you just locked him out. Your choice of clothing is not a matter of cans and cannots, do's and don'ts. I try to tell my girls this all the time. It's not a, you cannot do this, you cannot do that, you can do. I always try to tell them it's not a list of cans and cannots and do's and don'ts. It's more than that. It's way more than that. It's a matter of modesty and influence. And influence is a big thing. I have 3 girls in my house. I teach several college courses at the college. I teach House and Home, and I teach Women of the Bible, and I teach Spirit-Filled Woman, and I teach my personal favorite, Remedial Grammar. I love grammar. And I teach Written Communications and Business Communications. But I have a lot of girls' class, Home and Budget and Home Management. I have all these, and I try to tell them all the time that leadership is influence. I have 3 daughters, and how they dress is going pretty much based on what I do. If I tell my daughters, don't wear that, or that's too short, or that's too tight, and yet I'm wearing too short, too tight, too low, too whatever, you fill in the blank, they're not going to do that. They're going to do it as long as I'm in charge, but the moment they leave the house, they're going to do what they want to do. Because my influence, do what I say and not what I do, that does not work. They always are going to do what you do. So it's more than a matter of you cannot, don't do this, don't wear that, you can't wear that. It's a matter of, do I want to be modest in the sight of God, and do I want to influence people? I tell the girls in my class, I used to say single white female, but I am not single. I am a married white female that lives in America. I can do whatever I want. I can wear whatever I want. I can go wherever I want. I can watch whatever I want. And that is true. I am an American. I can do all of those things. But as a Christian, I choose not to. It's not that I can't, because I can. I can do that. I choose not to, because I want to influence people. I want those girls to say, you know what? I'm going to choose to influence. And so if wearing this might make somebody stumble, I'm not going to do it. It's as simple as that. It's not as big of a deal as we make it out to be. It really isn't. It all boils down to, do I want to influence people to follow Christ or not? That's it. That's it in a nutshell. All right? And you know what? When my husband was in the youth group, he was the youth pastor for 10 years. And we had, you know, we had girls come through our youth group, public school girls, Christian school girls, homeschool girls, you name them, we had them. And, you know, I wasn't nearly as afraid for those girls who sometimes would come and, you know, like we'd be in teen church or whatever, and my husband and I would walk in and you see them doing this, you know, tugging that shirt, or, you know, pulling that shirt up, or, you know, stretching it out a little bit, sucking it in. Okay, I wasn't nearly as worried for those girls because their conscience pricked them. They kind of knew. And so you could help them. You know, they knew their skirt was probably just a little bit too short. They knew it when they put it on. And then when they see somebody, you know, like, you know, the youth pastor or their Sunday school teacher, they're going to try to pull it down, fix it, whatever. At least their conscience still pricked them. The girls that scared me were the ones who blatantly just put it on and say, this is who I am. Take me for who I am. Those are the girls that I was worried about because they didn't care. They didn't care anymore. And there was, you really couldn't get to them very well because they had already made up their minds. This is how it's going to be. And, you know, go ahead and try to change my mind. And that's what they were like. And some of those girls are harder to influence. where was I? Okay. So the ones that were blatantly displayed their lack of modesty. Okay. Or what about, at least I'm not as bad as so-and-so. Oh, my goodness. How many times have I heard that? Yeah, I'll tell my poor daughter. She's all legs. I truly feel for you girls who are all legs. I do, because the skirts are just hard to find. That's just the truth. I know it. My daughter is about this much torso and that much leg. And so it's really hard to find skirts that are long enough. She's at the age where there's the awkward length, you know. Anything that's below the knee or above your ankle is an awkward length to her. So, Emily's nodding. It must be the new thing. I don't know. But if it's below the knee or above the ankle, you know, like this far, it's an awkward length. And so she has such a hard time with skirts. Well, at least I'm not as bad as so-and-so. Or at least it's not as short as so-and-so gets to wear. You realize that so-and-so is not the standard by which God is going to judge you, right? Okay, he's not going to say, oh, okay, Bethany, come up here. Your skirt's 2 inches above your knees, but Susie's is 4 inches, so you're okay. That's not what he's going to do. He's going to say, what does my word say? My word says modesty. And I pulled out a verse here for you. 2 Corinthians 10:12 says, for we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise. We try to make ourselves feel better because we're not as bad as so-and-so. It's not as short as so-and-so. But that doesn't matter, because the Bible says that if you're comparing yourselves among yourselves, you are not wise. You are supposed to compare it to his word. You are to compare it to God's word. The next one, the third one, we've got the music room, the closet, the home theater. It's okay to watch that movie. No one knows what you're watching. No one sees the inappropriate scene that you're watching or the language and the blasphemy that you're listening to. You realize that when someone takes God's name in vain, that is breaking one of the commandments, right? That is breaking one of the 10 basic commandments. And yet, sometimes we don't even hear it. It just flies right in and out, and you don't even know it. I cringe when I hear somebody take my God's name in vain. I feel a cringe inside, and I can't do that. But sometimes if we hear it over and over and over and over and over and over, we become callous to it, right? Whose business is it anyway if you watch that violence, that rebellion, the crime, the filthiness, the rage, the demonic activity? I have right here a rabbit trail. My girls in my class, especially House and Home, I think I'm on to them. They always try to get me on a rabbit trail in class. You know, I'm like, all right, girls, we have to cover this many pages of notes because we go on too many rabbit trails. Mrs. Hagland? And they'll ask a question. Here I go off a rabbit trail. Well, this time I marked rabbit trail so that way I can get on the trail and then hop back off. Okay? And the question was, why is our world so fascinated by the demonic possession zombie thing? Why are we want to know more. Why are we so fascinated by it? Why in the world do we find that entertaining? You see all these previews for movies and they're all that stuff. You can't even watch commercials anymore. It's like, close your eyes. Don't look at that. Don't watch that. And we're very careful about what our kids see. And there are so many, even just on regular TV, commercials about zombies and vampires and demons and possession. I don't see anything entertaining about hell and the things that come out of it. And I don't think that we should be ignorant, but I don't think that we should be entertained by it as well. I don't think that our fascination with those kind of things, I think that that grieves God. So, you know, who cares? You know, it's nobody's business what I watch in my house. It's my house. I can watch what I want. Lock that door. God, you can come in and you can tell me, you know, tell me where you want me to go. Tell me where you want me to serve. I want to serve somewhere, Lord, but don't tell me what I can watch. Lock that door. Don't tell me what I can listen to. Lock that door. Don't tell me what I can wear. Lock that door. And before you know it, you're locking all the doors and God's left standing in the entryway because you've locked all the doors to him. Okay, what about the bedroom? You're like, what do you mean? My bedroom's a mess. Yeah, it's okay, I know. Like I said, I have teenagers, okay? What I do in my room is my business. It's private. What I look at on the internet, what I read in magazines and books, that's nobody's business. That's my business. That's my personal business. That's not your business, okay? What I text, what I Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, tweet, all of these things, do they please God? Or do you say, you know what? I can do what I want. Lock the door. Click. 92% of teens report going online daily. 92% of teenagers go online daily. 24% say they go online almost constantly. I can't even believe that. Do they not have any chores to do? That's what I always say. Are you done with your chores? Yes, ma'am. According to a new study from the Pew Research Center, more than half of teens defined in this report are ages 13 to 17 years old. 13 to 17, and they're online every single day. 12% reported once a day and then a few weekly. Nearly three-quarters of teens have access or have themselves a smartphone. Fully 91% of teens go online from mobile devices at least occasionally, and among these mobile teens, 94% go online daily or more often. Constantly checking your Facebook, your Snapchat, your Twitter, your whatever, constantly online. Don't get me wrong. I am not against the internet. I love the internet. I love social media. I have a Twitter account. I have a Facebook. And I have a Pinterest page. That's evil laugh. I am almost a pro pinner. I remember when my friend first introduced me to Pinterest, I'm like, what's the big deal? And I created my first board. Oh, you see the commercial, like, don't go back. Don't do it. I didn't listen. And now, 4,000 pins later, I'm like, oh, I like that pin it. Oh, I like that pin it. Oh, I like that pin it. I have to set a timer on myself because it can be addictive. So I'm not against the internet. I definitely use it. I definitely love Pinterest. I love Pinterest, okay? It's so fun. But you realize that when these other things, and I don't know about all of the social media that teenagers do. I don't. My kids don't have it. You know, I know that there's one where you can take a picture of yourself or whatever and send it to somebody, and it lasts for a second or two. Is that Snapchat? Is that what that is? Okay, good. See, hey, look, hey. Yeah, I know what I'm talking about. My teenagers, they don't. My son has an iTouch, and my daughter has an iTouch, and we have internet at our house, but they have filters on, and they get 30 minutes a day, period. And my son is 16. You might say, oh, my goodness, that's, how do they live? You know what? They read. Yeah, a book, really, like a real book. They do. They know how. They enjoy it. They have chores. Yes, I'm one of those parents. Luke mows the lawn, and he shovels snow, and he rakes the leaves, and Bethany does laundry, and she does dishes, and oh, yeah, I'm one of those mothers. But you know what? I don't want to raise meatheads. I just don't. My kids are going to grow up knowing how to function in society, so if the power ever went out, they wouldn't panic because they would know what to do. Oh, I got to Google it. What do I do? No, you don't. They already know what to do. Okay? And I will tell you this funny thing. Last week, I think it was my daughter and my son were putting up a volleyball net down at the end of the property. And we live out in the middle of nowhere. We really do. I mean, like, out in the middle of nowhere. But these two teenage guys kept riding their bikes back and forth on our road. Nobody lives on our road but us. So it's like, okay. So, you know, we're watching them. They ride down past the house. And then they turn around and ride back down. And then they turn around and I'm like, okay, whatever. And then they stop. I'm out potting plants, you know, doing my thing. And they stop right in front of our driveway. That's not obvious. Teenage guys, sometimes I don't know what's going on. So they stop right there at the driveway, like, you know, that's totally natural for two guys riding their bikes to stop outside of our house where no one lives on our road. And so they finally got the courage, and the one says, hey, my friend wants to ask you a question. Why don't you just ask, dude? You're already talking. So they said, are you guys having a party? Because they could see us putting up the volleyball net. And we're like, no, we're just, you know, putting the net up to play. And like, because we can help if you're having a party. Like, no, we're not having a party, but, you know, just going to play. And then the other one's like, do it, ask him, do it. You know, he's elbowing. I'm like, come on, guys, I'm not dumb. You know, I'm not blind, I can see you. So the other one says, can we play volleyball? I said, yeah, go on down there, have fun. You know, I've got five kids already down there. What's two more? And so they went down, and they were bouncing around playing volleyball and stuff. And one guy was 18, and one was 16. Now, remember, I have a 14-year-old daughter, okay? And so they're down there, and they're playing volleyball, and I'm keeping a very close eye on them with, you know, the gun cocked, one step, buddy. Okay? Well, they're down there playing volleyball and stuff. And I've never met these boys before. Remember, we live on a dirt road in the middle of nowhere. And so they're talking to my son, like, hey, man, how old are you? And my son told, you know, I'm 16. And they were about to leave, and they said, do you have a cell phone? And he said, no. And the other dude was like, you don't have a cell phone, man? He said, no. He goes, how old are you? 16. Well, why don't you have a cell phone? And my son, bless his little heart, because I've conditioned him. Well, my parents don't think I'm ready for one yet. And now that I mention it, I don't think I am either. That's all he said. 16. And the boy said, let me guess, Grace Baptist Church, right? How in the world? What? Because I don't let my 16-year-old have a phone. Let me guess, Grace Baptist Church. How would he know that? How would he even have a clue? It was hysterical. I'm like, oh, okay, so Grace Baptist Church teenagers are not allowed to have phones. No, he just doesn't have one because, first of all, they're expensive, and he doesn't have a job. That's why he doesn't have a phone. I just thought it was funny, though, that they associated, you know, he's 16, he doesn't have a phone. Oh, you must be sheltered. You must go to Grace. And that's not necessarily the truth, okay? As Christians, we need to be so very careful with these tools, these rooms that we lock. We let the Lord in. We say, come into our lives. Come, I want you to lead me in everything. I want you to show me what your will is. I want you to lead me and to let me do what you have for me. But you lock all these doors and you leave him standing in the entryway. That's not letting him control your life. You're locking all these doors to him. No, don't tell me what to do here. No, I'm going to decide what to do over here. And you're locking all these doors, and he's not able to lead you like he wants to. So the first key is the key to your eternity. The second key is the key to your heart, or the key to your life. And the third one is the key to your life, which is service. Are you willing to do whatever God asks you to do? I remember when my husband told me, Pastor Jenkins called. He wants us to come up and be a youth pastor. I'm like, what? I hate teenagers. I can't be a youth pastor's wife. Are you kidding me? They're annoying. That's what I told him. I did. I don't want to be a youth pastor's wife. Are you kidding me? Are you willing to do what God wants for you to do? Are you willing to go wherever God sends you? Zimbabwe, the Congo, Gaylord, they're all the same. They're all in the middle of nowhere. At least in Gaylord, it's frozen half the year. I'd rather go somewhere hot. You know, I didn't want to go there, and I told my husband this. I said, no, I don't want to go. And he told Pastor Jenkins no, because I said no. It could have been my fault. I could have taken my husband out of God's will by telling him no. And it took me several weeks before I got right with God and said, honey, wherever God tells you to go, I'm behind you. But it took a while. I was not willing to go where God wanted to send me. Are you willing to serve where he places you? What if your plans are grand and God's plans are more humble? Are you willing to do that? The most fulfilling place you'll be is right in the middle of God's plan for your life. It may not be the easiest or the most fun or without problems. Like Brother Shirley said, there will be troubles. It doesn't matter who you are, Christian or not, there are going to be troubles. The difference is, If you're a Christian and you have troubles, you have Jesus. When I was 8, I gave God the keys to my eternity. When I was 13, I gave God the keys to my heart. When I was 15, I gave God the keys to my life. But there were some times when I took those keys back. Like when I told my husband, no. God, I'll do whatever you want me to do. No, I'm not going to Gaylord. And I had to get right and give those keys back to him. Because I gave them to him once and I took them back. Okay? Over and over again, sometimes we give God the keys and we take them back. We need to make sure that when we give him the keys, we let him keep the keys. Lord, you tell me what you want from me. You tell me what I'm supposed to do, where I'm supposed to go, what you want with my life. You take the keys. I don't want them back. All right, let's pray. Lord, I thank you for this day, Father. Thank you for these girls.